Well, hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Going Downhill. This is Wendy.
And I'm Shelly.
Wow. Wow, Shelly's in a good mood. How are ya?
It's been an interesting weekend. It's all right. I'm still like under the weather, as you can hear by my voice. I'm getting there though. I'm not as sick as I was. I tell you, these children are like petri dishes. You just get sick and sick and sick. They're awful.
Never have them. Never have them.
I don't plan on it. That's your job.
Been there, done that. I'm good. No more petri dishes for me.
Your kids can look after me when I'm old and gray.
They're not even going to look after me.
I know. Well, so, I mean, how are you doing? The butcher.
I'm good. Okay. Not my fault. She ran into me. Soccer play. Not my fault. You messed with a lumbinator. You're going to pay the price. So, lacerated liver. Not my fault. Okay? Let's move on.
All right, butcher. Let's go. Okay. All right. So, this week we were in Kvitfjell for the women and Aspen for the men. So lots of rando gossip on the men's side too. I have some fun reports because Brad Lashley was the TD down there, and as we all know, Brad Lashley is my boss. Technically, he's the head coach
from Ontario
for the Glen.
Very
very, like it's there. A big deal, and he had to make a lot of calls and interesting decisions. I have a couple of questions for him actually, but the complaints were that the hill was overwatered. But we'll get to that. It was entertaining.
Yes, you will.
And then for the women, just. No downhills because all canceled training. So a lot of downtime, a lot of people doing media interviews because Ragnhild Mowinkel has decided to retire.
Right. Just
been answering a lot of questions. And then kind of a super G, kind of not that exciting of a super G.
No. So the downhills got canceled because it was too foggy. It was way, way too foggy, not safe for the athletes. So the race got canceled, the training got canceled, the race got canceled. But our first Saturday Super G, it actually replaces Val di Fassa.
Yes,
from
it
a prior canceled race.
Yeah, so at least they got two in there because it was supposed to be a downhill, but at least they could get some more events in rather than just waste it and just have the one Super G. So that's nice.
Yeah.
For the women's first Super G, again, like we've been to Kvitfjell, we've talked about this hill before. It's pretty flat, and usually there's like some technical little rollers and stuff. But for the women's, the sets weren't all that interesting. They have a bit of a side hill at one point, but I'm not going to say anything really exciting going on here. Even the jump was smaller for the first day. The Rossi jump. So it's the Olympia Bakken again, where you have the start altitude of 782, the finish altitude is 182, the vertical drop is 600 meters, the course length is 2.1 kilometers or 2.2 kilometers, really. The first set was by a French coach, Marco Viale or Viala. I don't know if it's Italian or French. Yeah, it was 2 degrees to 4 degrees, kind of cloudy. Not very interesting.
Yeah, pretty gloomy, pretty overcast, kind of foggy in and out, and really spring like snow, right? Which has a different touch to the feel to the snow when you're racing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, once you get a little dampness in there too, it definitely works the ski a little bit differently. You know, like this big carousel turn towards the end, which goes into the pitch, and then a couple of turns right into the finish. Pretty standard Super G. This is a Super G, I think, that you could race in FIS.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that. They did run the same track of the men, which is nice. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, it's not super duper duper challenging in my opinion. A couple of blind turns, but you know the line, you're going to be fine. But you know what I think was the most challenging thing about this race?
The weather?
No, climbing to the start. You had to climb like 100 feet.
Well,
I would be exhausted.
For someone who just played like 7 games of soccer, I'm rather surprised that you're that out of shape. Also,
in 2 days.
But I know that you're just lazy. Wendy is the laziest Olympian you will ever meet. She drives across parking lots because she doesn't want to walk from store to store.
It's exhausting.
Just so effing lazy.
Well, you know, whatever.
Like put her in a competition and she's like raring to go for hours. Yeah, exactly. Have her like be like, could you walk down the block to get something? And she's like, nah, I'll drive.
We're not talking about me here, you know. Okay,
well, let's get back to the race.
Okay, sure. So, Super G. Mm-hmm. Well, we had in third, Puchner. Mm-hmm. So she was ahead, and she must have been, when she saw the split, she probably freaked out because she, on the top section, she was 0.8 seconds ahead.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, it was her.
She lost. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, so she was in her tuck, and she talked like the first 10, 11 gates.
Yeah. Yeah, and she was fast, and her turns were clean. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. And then she got pushed a little low in one of the turns, and she ended up 0.13 out.
Right.
And she has never finished in a World Cup higher than third. She got third twice, and now she got third again.
Yeah, I mean, she's not sad with it, but at the same time, very frustrating, no. For sure. Connie Hooter just yep. Came in, snuck in right in front of her by 1/100th of a second, so she lost second place by 1/100.
Oh, that's just so painful, isn't it?
I know. And, like, Connie, she did the same thing, tucking at the top. Bottom was just that little bit cleaner. Who knows where that 100th came from? Maybe it was a service man. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe she just closed her mouth going down the last little pitch. You know how Odermatt always has his mouth open? She closed her mouth. Boom. 1/100.
And then that Lara Goot, number one. Not a shocker on any of any accounts. Lord, she's just been killing it. So we have bib 8, 10, and 9 coming first, second, and third. So obviously that was pretty good. So, and Lara Goo just won by 0.12. And
yeah, it was pretty tight for those three girls.
Yeah, it was a race for sure. And I think that she just skis those cross kind of hills, like the follow away of turns, just a little bit cleaner.
Yeah, I mean, she does always look so super smooth and clean in her turns, but that didn't carry through for her to the second race.
Mm-mm. Not at all. So our second race, same thing, a second Super G. The setter was her own coach, Switzerland, Roland Platzer. We have Esther Ledeska, always nice to see on the podium.
Yay,
she's always a contender Esther. When she shows up.
Well, that's right. She had tied for fourth the day before, and I think she was only, what, 1/100th out or 2/100ths off the podium? It was really close, something like that. But she did have a Super G victory in 2020 in France, Val d'Isère. And talk on the street is that she had been sick at the beginning of the season, so wasn't performing up to par what she wanted to. And it can be frustrating, right, when you're not feeling well, right, Shelley?
Yeah, she said that she had breathing issues for sure, so earlier in the season, so that probably just affected her that little. Like, I mean, if you can't breathe, kind of hard to perform. So
yeah, that sucks.
Lara Goot came in second, and then Brignone came in first. So I just wanted to point out that poor Kaisa Wickhoffli.
Oh,
home, missing the podium.
Yeah. Because of Esther.
Yeah.
Esther pushed her down. And it was close, though, wasn't it? Like 1/100th or 2/100ths again? It's a couple 1/100ths anyway. It was very close. Yeah, I felt bad for her, too.
Six.
That sucked. Yeah. That was close. So Brignone, she's finally got that fire back, right? She's had a tough go this year in Super G. She's been 4th, 12th, 9th, 2nd, 6th, and now she comes out with her win. So that is her 10th Super G victory.
Yeah, and the Super G I found was really boring. The weather was not great. So you had fog coming in, taking over, and doing a lot of holds. The visibility was awful, but the set was very boring. Mm-hmm. They had them ski around the Rossi jump instead of doing it. So in general, I didn't, aside from the terrifying nature of going through a thick cloud, not being able to see anything half the time.
Yes.
As a race, it was not the most exciting. There wasn't really anything exciting happening. No one had to risk it for the biscuit. It was pretty conservative sets. Like, it's just kind of standard left foot, right foot. Don't get sucked down the line on some of the carousels and stuff. And that's it.
Well, there's 48 athletes. You get one inspection in a Super G, but this course is different than the course set prior. It's not like the downhill where you run the same course. So it's a different set. And this one was a lot turnier than the first one. It was actually about 5 seconds slower for the race. So that's how much turnier it was.
I was glad for the turnier aspect of it, especially in these sections where it was blind. Because if they had been going, they were still going 100 kilometers an hour. Had they been going faster, I think it would have been very dangerous. I don't even know if I would have run this race, to be honest.
Well, I would have. But they did have a gazillion holds, right? Yeah. They kept stop starting because of the fog.
Yeah, and that's when you have that stop start, are you having a fair and equitable race at that point? I don't think this race should have gone off.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably could have called it. Mm-hmm. Even like poor Alice Robinson, she was ready to go, getting in the countdown. Boop, stop, start. Out mm-hmm. she goes. So she didn't, you know, your brain and your body is ready to go. And then it's just like stop and it's, you know. So kind of sucks for those that did get held back in the start. Yeah, it was a decision they had to make. And I guess with the fog coming in and out, they just decided to go for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, Laura Ghosh was bib number one, and when she came down, she came through that fog, and she just caught, you could see that she almost looked scared, and so she got caught on her heels coming out of it, and then just hit a little bit of a bump and was out and hit the control gate and hit hard.
Oh, yeah.
Hard. And you're right and that would give me pause to keep on running a race if the first competitor goes through and there's hardly any visibility and they do hurt themselves like that. I'm glad that no one was significantly injured in this one, because I really thought it was a sketchy call to actually run this race.
Yeah. Oh, well, you got overruled.
Yeah, Yes.
The standings in Super G now, they're quite close. There's one more Super G left, right, at the finals, World Cup finals.
Mm-hmm.
So Laura Goot Barami, she's leading the Super G standings, 540 points. Connie Hooter, 471. And right behind her, Brignoni at 466. So it's really still quite a close one.
That'll be fun to watch. I'm excited for the finals for this one. It'll be good in summer. Yeah. And then we have, are we good with the ladies right now?
Yeah. Did you want to thank our sponsors?
Do you want to thank our sponsors for once, Wendy?
No, you can.
All right, then I will thank Freshwater Distillery, Vocal Marker, Del Bello, and Helly Hansen. Thanks, guys. We appreciate you helping us succeed.
In awesome clothes.
In awesome clothes. And skis. And woohoo. Drinks.
Yes. In no particular order.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's go to Brad's race. Good old Belashinator. We have a tradition at the Glen, apparently, that when Brad leaves for these types of races, they pull a prank on him for when he comes home.
Oh no.
So I had a 6-foot cardboard cutout made of Brad.
Oh my God. My God.
Yeah, so everybody was having fun with Brad 2.0 while he was gone. So you will find out about that when he steps into his office tomorrow morning. But he had an interesting bunch of races to run, I'm not gonna lie. So
yeah.
Let's talk about that. Obviously, our first run, so we're here in Aspen, United States of America. Our first course setter for run one for the men's GS was France, Thomas Maître, and then the second one was Julien Vignier from Switzerland. The course name is Straw Pile. Start altitude of 2,880 meters. I didn't realize it was that high, honestly. It makes sense, though. It is it's Colorado. Finish altitude 2,470 with a vertical drop of 410 meters. It's a good time. It's sunny, -2, -1. Lots of complaints about how hard the surface was for the men.
Yeah, super hard and icy at the top, and then kind of towards the middle and lower, it did get softer conditions.
Mm-hmm. But you could see the men really struggling with this. If you were inside at all, you would lose your outside ski in a heartbeat. And we saw a lot of people making a lot of errors and a lot of recoveries. I thought this was actually pretty exciting. The first two, like the sets for the first day, I thought were pretty standard, nothing too tricky. There's a lot of rollers and bumps in this, right?
I really enjoyed this GS.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked it. It was nonstop action, really steep, you know, pretty much the whole course, then going over rollers and blind gates and little bumps in between. And I really liked it. And especially where that road was, there's a road about 3/4 of the way down. And that caused problems. If you weren't ready for that road, 2 gates later, you're probably Auskashiden.
Yeah, you could see that it was definitely a bit of a compression in the turn there as they came across that road. And it was entertaining to watch that middle section with all the rollers. And then once you get to the end is a little bit flat and like kind of cruisy, but that middle section was super technical, and it was fun to watch, especially given the conditions, because you never knew who was just like, it's some of the best in the world. They make one little mistake in that section and they can't make it up.
Well, Odermatt made like 3 different mistakes, and somehow he was able to overcome those and still end up on top.
Well, yeah, his first section, like, he blew out on top and just completely lost it at the beginning. And then he made up with, like, 0.8 seconds or something just in the last two parts of the course. It was unbelievable to watch him, just the way he made that ski work for him. And then he kind of went into that calm, disciplined upper body, completely on the outside ski, the Odermatt that we know. And I think that his run was... it was a masterclass at the bottom. He earned that win 100%. Amazing. Just amazing. And then, so we have on third place, we have McGrath, Atlee Lee McGrath.
Yep.
Norway. Super happy for him. He's young, and I think he's going to end up, I think he has the potential to end up challenging someone like Odermatt in a year or two.
Oh, absolutely. So prior to this, his best result in GS was sixth place. So, and he nailed his line. I thought it was very ballsy going for it.
Way ballsy.
But he nailed it. Mm-hmm. Nailed it. Amazing. And his dad, Felix McGrath, used to be on the U.S. ski team, went back in my day. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the crowd is really behind them, knowing that his dad is American. So that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then Loic Maillard, good for him. He's been skiing really well lately as well. So happy for him coming into second. And then, as we said, Marco Odermatt winning in the first. I mean, the second run was interesting because if you look at the times, the person who actually had the first fastest time for the first run was Raphael Hasser, who we don't hear a ton about, but right. He had the first, like, he just ripped it. And then we have everybody else kind of like coming in afterwards, like McGrath had... eighth place, the eighth fastest run for second run and seventh fastest run, which kind of gave him the ability to sneak onto that podium.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's really exciting for Maillard because he's only 0.14 behind. It was so close and very exciting to watch, especially with mistakes being made all over the place.
Yes.
And that was his first podium of the year in GS.
Yes. I think super, super fantastic. And the winds were so high.
Yes. Yes, so, they were. That's right.
So here's my question for you.
Yeah.
I've always been told that you... So butterflying gates. So when you flip a gate upside down, so it causes that to look like a little butterfly. So it has a little X kind of going through it. The panel ends up being twisted. I was always told that you can't do that anymore because it messes with the release mechanisms of the flags so that it's dangerous.
Huh. I have not seen that as a rule saying you cannot flip the flags.
It's not a rule, but I've been told don't do it for that reason. Because it was so windy that they ended up butterflying a lot of those flags. And I don't think I've seen that at a World Cup.
I think I might have seen it before. I think I saw it in a women's downhill before that they did that. I don't think it's very common, obviously, because maybe you shouldn't be racing if it's that windy.
And sometimes what they'll do is they'll take, you know, like the bottom corner of the outside kind of part, like the out of side of the gate, and then they won't attach that. So it kind of like flaps through.
Yeah.
But I have not seen it butterflied like that, I don't think.
Yeah, it was crazy. But I mean, they had to. It was blowing over.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, for sure. Absolutely.
So Eric Reed finished in 21st. So good for him getting the solid result in there. He was very smooth. He did get a little bit twisted over that road I'd mentioned earlier, but he didn't lose it. He kept his concentration. He kept going. So it's nice to see him back in that top 30, making that flip. So he did finish 21st, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. And you brought up Dominic Rascher. That he brought up?
Yep.
So he started number 50.
Yes.
And ended up in 20th. Mm-hmm. He was 29th after the first run. So he did move up. He had a great run. It was exciting to watch. So he was one of my attack from the backs, as well as Luca Erni from Switzerland. He started number 62 and finished 24th.
Yeah, 52 is also 22. The one thing you have to say for these really hard conditions is that it really ends up being more of an equitable race because the track is still in good condition when they come down.
Yes.
There's not as much as a groove. You're not fighting for it as much. So it's kind of a bit of an equalizer. And I think that's why we see some of those numbers kind of popping in and having that opportunity to really do it. Because if you look at the next day, there's a ton of later numbers that are coming in and sneaking in there. And they've had the ability to watch the mistakes from the other, the best in the world, essentially, and be able to kind of define what they need to be doing on those courses. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, super cool. But one thing I think the athletes noticed and felt was the altitude. Yes. Like they looked so tired at the Odermatt was just like, forget it. I'm not even cheering. I can't even breathe right now. So, I mean, almost 10,000 feet, like their lungs must have been burning. So hopefully their fitness training paid off for them.
Yeah. And I mean, Odermatt has been saying that he's a little tired. He was feeling good for the race, the first race. But, you know, like he's been trying to manage his schedule. And again, as we've talked about before, but he's not skiing slalom. And I think that's because of the load of how many races they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, this race did replace Solden because it was canceled. The Solden race was due to weather. And so, I mean, he'd be happy with the 40,000 Swiss francs that he got from today's race.
For sure. Absolutely. Do we want to talk about day two now, or are we good?
No. what I noticed is the starter actually did the countdown in the athletes' languages.
Yes, I noticed that as well. Yes.
Except for Norway. He did that in English. But the other ones, I thought that was awesome. Italian, Swiss, French, German. And that was really nice. I thought that was really cool.
Swiss is not a language, right?
Oh, God. German, German, German.
You know, they speak a few languages in Switzerland, right?
So German. Got it. So this is their eighth race out of 11, right? They still have a couple more to go, the one the next day, and then plus that the finals. But did you know that in 1950, these were where the first world championships were held outside of Europe?
I had no idea.
And now you know. And in 1968 was the very first official World Cup. And do you know who won it?
Not you.
Nope, not me. American, Billy Kidd, he won the slalom. Hmm. And our very own Nancy Green Rain won all three of the races there.
Nancy Green.
Yeah. So now we can go on to the next day if you'd like.
Okay.
So, well, no, you know what? I want to back up a bit here. We talked about before. This is a good one because you brought it up. So we're going to finish this, sister. So we talked about the water, the injection, right? So this is after the first race, the first day. Actually, it was during the first day because do you know whose dad got involved in this conversation?
I knew exactly whose dad got involved in this conversation because there was a few texts flying around about it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, want to talk about it?
Yeah, sure. So Kristoffersen's dad decided to verbally abuse some of the course workers on the condition of the course and got sanctioned and then got his credentials removed so that he could no longer attend.
Yes, he got kicked off the hill. So, yeah. And his reasoning was he felt there's too much water, therefore too much ice on the course to make it a fair race.
Whereas here we are talking about how it makes it fit more fair.
Yeah, exactly.
We're like, how does it make it less fair, Mr. Kristoffersen?
I don't know, but I mean, they're feisty. Those are feisty. I know. Fellas.
I was actually thinking, I was like, oh, like father, like son. I guess they're just like an emotional Viking berserker kind of tribe or something. Like,
oh my God. Well, Pope is not listening. He's going to come after us. Anyway, so I thought that was interesting.
We know because, only you know our what? Family listens. It's totally fine.
Yeah, that's right. It's true. So yeah, I mean, if someone complains, like it is what it is. The course is deemed as fair. So it's going to go ahead. And no matter what you say, it's still going ahead. So Too bad, Mr. Kristoffersen.
Yeah, he must have been, to be able to be kicked off a hill, like even just a warning and a sanction, but to be kicked off, he had to be super abusive.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Now, not to his side, but there were 24 DNFs in the first run, which is a high percentage. But man, if you could just get that course report back and know where you're going, right? That can make such a difference in that run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then we have our day two.
yes we do, the ninth race.
Yes, so obviously we're gonna go the same thing. Our first setter was Michael Percher from Austria. Our second setter was our good old Canadian boy Nick Cooper. Like to talk about that second set, but we'll talk about run one first.
Right. Yes. No problem.
So go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, no. I'm going to go. So Eric Reed, he missed the cutoff by 1/10.
I know.
That's it. 1/10. Oh, so close.
Poor guy.
Your turn.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this first run was much in the same line. Windy as hell. Completely all over the place. Like super hard snow, nothing in particular. Like it was exactly the same kind of as the day one and day two. The set was pretty standard. It wasn't anything too tricky. It was just, you know, like being on your outside ski and some of those off camber turns. And if you weren't on your outside, you were out. That's Auskashiden. See you later. Or you were doing a lot of recoveries. Like a couple of the guys, I think it was maybe a German or something. He basically fell and just slid. Like all the way down. Like,
oh yeah,
so
yeah.
Icy.
so icy. You really can't do much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, for the second set, I thought the second set was set by Nick Cooper, our Canadian coach. Right? He doesn't have any horses in this race anymore, so he can kind of set what he wants. Like he's not going to set for his athlete because doesn't have any athletes in there. So,
right.
He set some tight turny stuff on a really hard icy surface, and made it super exciting.
Super exciting. Like I said before, like Odermatt, he's making mistakes. Yeah, he might be getting tired, but I don't even know how he did. He'd made two huge mistakes at the top of the course. How he survived, I don't know. Those legs came whipping around, but his bottom section was so fast. Yes. That it made up for those mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. So, and he ended up winning, of course. And even he was shocked that he won.
Yes, he was. Yeah, he couldn't believe he was shaking his head.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, good old Simon Haugen. Congrats to him. Great third place from Norway. And then Loic Maillard, again, second place. Good job.
Yeah, 0.34 out. You know, a little bit more room than the day prior. But, you know, they're nipping at Odermatt now.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's fantastic to see that kind of challenge happening. I mean, a little bit too late for any type of globe, but
right for anyone else. Yeah. Yeah. But they did have a lot of delays again for the wins. Right.
Yes.
So they didn't have to stop starts.
They did lose the TV feed too at one point.
Yeah, they did. So we still have overall stand. You mentioned those. Okay. No one's going to catch Odermatt. He's already got the globe. Fine. But the race for second and third is really close in the overalls. Did you see the standings?
Go on. So
we got Zuchik with 370. He's in second. Odermatt's got 900. We're not even going to count him anymore. Zuchik in second with 370. Loic Maillard, 368. Christofferson, 350. Kranjic, 347. So second and third is up for grabs. And they're still getting money from the sponsors, even though they don't win the overall. Mm-hmm. They're still getting them for... But that's really close. Those ones are close.
Yeah. Well, you have to wonder if Christofferson's performance at all was affected by his dad getting kicked off the hill.
possibly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, entirely possibly. Yeah. Anyway.
Are we good for the slalom?
Yeah, moving on.
All right. This slalom, standard sets, nothing like a good terrain for it. Not uber tricky, nothing super crazy. The course name is Lower Ruthie's Run. The start altitude is 2,685. The finish altitude is 2,470. So there's sucking wind at that altitude still. Vertical drop is 215 meters. Great Britain sets the first course. It's Tristan Glass-Davies. And second set is Switzerland with Matteo Joris. And there's like 64 gates and 63 turning gates for each course. So same kind of consistency. I was super happy for your Great Britain.
I know. They rocked it.
Taylor Lorry. Can we talk about him for a second?
Sure.
Because we said at the very beginning of the season that we were really surprised at the strength of the Great Britain's team. They just had to get the experience and then kind of like roll it in there, right? So
right.
I'm really super happy for them because Lorry Taylor and Dave Redding, when was the last time that two Great Britain athletes ever came in the top 10 together?
Yeah.
I don't think there ever has been.
I think we've come close, but those two, that it's awesome. It's very exciting for Great Britain and some of the smaller countries, right? Who maybe don't have the same funds as the big countries.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. And I mean, again, they had a huge amount of snow the night before.
Oh, and it dumped and dumped and
it dumped and dumped and dumped. And so Lashley was probably not happy because he had to delay the start by an hour. I think it was an hour and a half. And then the second run, hour and a half for the first run, I do believe, and then the second run was delayed by another hour. So basically it was dust on crust. So once you got down to it, you got down to the hard stuff and you were back on that ice. So they cleared it all away and they ran the race. Good for them.
They had
a coursework on this one.
They had 70 volunteers who got up super duper early to get all the snow off the course. And they worked like crazy and they were able to get the race off. So that was nice. The ninth race out of 11. So congrats to the volunteers who were out there working their butts off.
Yeah, right. No, the volunteers are the heart and soul of a race. They never get enough credit. Mm-hmm.
They don't. They don't.
And so, you know, maybe because his dad wasn't there, Henrik Kristoffersen came in third.
possible.
Yeah, and then Linus Terrasse came in second, and then Loic Maillard again, first place for that guy. He's doing well in the tech.
Kristoffersen. So he did complain about the first run conditions.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Okay.
That's par for the course. He was 1.17 out.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a lot, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, it was. But he has had 51 Slalom World Cup podiums. Now he's got 52. That's a large number for Kristoffersen. Mm-hmm. And Maillard, first World Cup victory in slalom. That's so awesome.
That is great. It was an interesting podium. It was an interesting race. I mean, again, the conditions were really hard. People, if they ran it too straight, they were out. A couple of straddles here and there. Like, nothing. Definitely, like, it was fun.
Yeah.
I don't think it was as fun to watch as the GS, but it was a good one. And just the pure amount of snow just puking the whole time.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. If I were a volunteer, I would have just been over on the backside there. I'll be back. Don't mind me.
You'd be at the bar.
Yeah, okay, fine. I would be. But I'm going to go loop back again to Great Britain. So Laurie finished what? You know, he started number 49 and then he finished 8th. He was my attack from the back.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And then we also have, you know, Kilian Premstaller from mm-hmm. Austria. He's 2002 baby, and he came bib 54 to 22nd.
Yeah, that's a good one.
The course did not deteriorate despite the amount of snow that was falling. They did a really good job on keeping it fair, and I think that again gave those people an opportunity to really pop in there, and that's great.
Well, exactly. Our Eric and Justin unfortunately did not qualify for that second run in the slalom.
Mm-hmm. To which one of my fellow coaches was so mean. He was like, Eric, he should retire.
He's like 12.
Oh, I was like, dude, like you might be having a rough time. Like this.
Yeah, I think he's having a rough year, you know, trying different things with his equipment. And that's always something you're messing with. I mean, Kristoffersen says that too. So, you know, can use that. The slalom standings, they're pretty close. Manny Feller is still on top after this race mm-hmm. with 635. This is for the overall slalom. Yeah. Strasser is 466 points. Maillard now has 359. And right behind him is Clément Noël with 352. Oh, Huygen right behind him with 350. Mm-hmm. So Noël was leading the first run in the slalom here.
Yep.
And he freaking straddled about a third of the way down.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yeah,
and it was his race to lose, and he lost it, right? So he comes down, and once you see him straddle, and he just pulls off to the side and
cries.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That would have been me. Yes. Mm-hmm. And they also had the closing ceremonies. They had a super cool drone show. Did you hear about it?
No.
You know how they fly the drones up in the air? They're amazing lights. They can change the lights, and they fly in these formations. And they had a drone show, and it had a lot of the skiers, like, downhill skiers changed to slalom, and it was amazing. Oh, it was really, really cool. If you can find a YouTube video of it or something, it's pretty cool. So yeah, it's really neat, super neat. But on a good note is our Liam Wallace is back home, our injured Canadian athlete.
Good.
He's back home getting taken care of by the folks. Mm-hmm. So this is great news.
Nice, nice. What's his projection? Do we know anything about his recovery?
No, I'll talk to his mom later and get some deets.
It would be great. And, you know, yeah, tell him that we send him our best.
I will do that.
Mm-hmm. And people can still write, you know, words of support for recovery.
They can, to his Instagram and now on Facebook. If you want to message him there, I'm sure he'd still love to hear from all of the world people out there listening. And my mom and dad.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Anyway, I don't really have much else to report, do you?
I do not. I'm just going to go maybe lacerate someone else's liver and I'll be on my way.
All right. Well, then next week, if you haven't killed anyone and you're still here and not in jail, we'll be in Åre, Sweden. And we'll be in Krantzegora.
Okay. Right on. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. I'll see you there.
Okay. I need a trip.
Well, for this one, I've been Shelley.
And I've been Wendy.
Keep your tips up.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. I don't know why I'm saying that.
8? Yeah.
Wait, you lacerated someone's liver?
Uh-huh.
How?
Exactly. It's impossible. It's impossible.
Did you? Did you?
Two girls are trying to take me out on the boards. I'm on the board, so you can't T-bone me. That's a card. You get in trouble for that. One girl did it. I got away from her. 2 seconds later, I took two steps. Another girl came flying in, nailed me to the boards. Well, she kind of bounced off of me, shall we say, and she landed awkwardly. Called me an F and C out loud, which is a card for her, automatic get kicked out of the game.
Yeah.
Anyway, their team was screaming at me. I'm like, she tried to take me out. I was just running this way and she T-boned me, so it's not my fault.
So she has a lacerated liver?
Yeah. So they're all yelling, you broke her ribs. Oh, you're all doctors now? Okay, whatever. Anyway, I'm like, how can I break a rib? How can I break 3 ribs? Even if I put my elbow up to like, to get not T-boned,
yeah,
you can't break 3 ribs.
Well, that's her fault. That's 100% her fault. That's super 100%.
No, she fell down and got limped off or whatever, and then she had a lacerated liver and blamed me for it. I'm like, man, I was going one way, you were coming the other. It's your fault, honey. You're messing with the lumbinator. You're gonna pay the price.
Yeah, for sure. I would have stuck an elbow out. It's also like just protection. It would have been my first reaction.
Dana says I'm the butcher.
I'll get you a shirt that says that.
Butcher. It's so fun, but don't blame me.